Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there, if you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
And now, the Boston Bastard Brigade, Electric Sisterhood, and Omnis Training proudly present No Borders, No Picks, the world's J-pop and alternative hotspot.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another episode of No Borders, No Race. I am your King Baby Duck, Evan Borgo. Thank you once again for tuning in. I know I've been doing Summer Anime 2017 first impressions these last couple weeks, and odds are you might have enjoyed them. Or not. You could just be here for the J-pop and game talk. I didn't want to do it this week, as I try my best not to do much of the same thing a couple of weeks in a row. However, I didn't want to stop until I give just one more recommendation, and that is for Sure Dure Children. It's a 12-minute series of shorts each week focusing on different high school couples, and it is funny as hell. I really don't want to dive too much into the story arcs as it spoils the fun, but let's just say that there is just like one of the best little sister characters I've seen in anime all year long, and some great one-liners that'll have you laughing your ass off while watching. You can catch Sure Dure Children on Crunchyroll and VRV, and look forward to an English simuldub from Funimation sometime soon. On that note, why don't we begin this week's playlist? Remember, as always, if you like what you hear and want to support these artists, you can grab just about all these records on cdjapan.co.jp, Yes Asia, Amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, and your local record store. And we're going to start with a classic from Gakt, whose work in music, film, theater, and animation has made him one of Japan's finest Renaissance men. From his 2003 album Crescent, this is White Eyes.
Yeah. 刻まれ続く罪の中で震えた全ての
Flip with Bat Boy, Bat Girl from their 2013 record, Love Toxicity. The band sadly went on indefinite hiatus last year, so who knows when or if we'll ever see them reunite. Such a shame. I actually saw them live back at Japan Night in 2009, I want to say, and they were spectacular. Like, this is when they were first just starting out. They were just really, really good. I was sad when Regular Show called it a day earlier this year, as it captured perfectly the essence of living in your post-college days while taking the most mundane tasks to the extreme. At the very least, we can say that the tale of Mordecai and Rigby ended things on the top of their game, with nary a bad episode in its 261 episode run, a feat that's really quite hard to reach. With its end, I was curious to know when we'd see creator J.G. Quintel's next work, as I figured it'd be a while before he'd jump into his next project. Well, this past Thursday, I was greeted with a nice surprise in the form of a trailer for Quintel's next animated series. Close enough. It sticks with the visual style of Regular Show, but pushes the adult-leveled humor more than Cartoon Network would ever allow in its kid-friendly time slot. Hence why it's gonna be on TBS instead. Close Enough acts as a spiritual sequel of sorts to Regular Show, though, with the former focusing on one growing up in their 20s, and the latter being more about grasping whatever youth may remain of your 30s. And from this trailer, we can expect some of the more trippier and exaggerated aspects of adulthood like what we saw on Regular Show. Only this time, we've got people taking hallucinogenics, clown strippers, drunk stag parties, daughters catching their parents having sex, and some fun levels of debauchery. Where Regular Show took its cue from Quintel's 2005 short, The Naive Man from Lollyland, this one instead follows a path similar to that of 2006's 2 in the AM PM. And if you haven't seen either of those shorts, by the way, you should definitely check them out on YouTube. You'll see how Quintel's ideas from these two films went one day to evolve into both Regular Show and this upcoming series, Close Enough. So while it does tread a similar path as its predecessor, I'm very excited about Close Enough. I love Quintel's style of humor, not to mention the way he can take an average plot and crank it into some of the most surreal shit you've ever seen. Needless to say, it's going to make the older fans of Regular Show, i.e. people like me, very happy when it premieres either later this year or early next year on TBS. Perhaps I can convince Phil the Issues Guy to team up for a recap series on this one, because this one looks like it could be a lot of fun to chat about. But until then, let's just wait a bit more for Quintel's next work of hopefully comedic brilliance to pop up on our TVs. Coming up, we've got some Swedish electronica in the form of Teddy Bears from their 2007 record Soft Machine and accompanied by Mad Cobra. This is Cobra Style.
I'm in the first people button. Nobody chat come face me with some. Like only have 22 in a me something. Then I feel so forget the next 1,000 fool. Press trigger, me no press people button. Nobody chat come face me with some. Like only have 22 in a me something. Then I feel so forget the next 1,000 fool. Anytime you ready, put now we see start war. See who does this for the top up on the
my
star.
Style is the bomb, the bomb, the dang, diggy diggy. Our room one no play with the bomb, the dang, diggy diggy. My style is the bomb, the dang, diggy diggy. Our room one no play with the bomb, the dang, diggy diggy.
Oh, now we sit down and I watch your man a live. Watch your man a war now, who are roll big. Sit down and I plan for come put man for fridge. Remember when you dig goal that who you fit in. Certainly for boy we have stopped deal with. Keep say them a friend and them bad mind
me friend. My style is the bomb, the dang, diggy diggy. Karu mo I don't play with the bomb, the dang, diggy diggy. My style is the bomb, the dang, diggy diggy. Karu mo I don't play with the bomb, the dang, diggy diggy.
trigger, me no press people button. No bad chat come face me with something. Like how me have 22 in a me something. Game say them a friend and them bad mind me friend. Anytime you ready, fool, anytime star. Man no do take the long speech from the
style
guy.
Style is the bomb, the bomb, the dang, the dang, diggy, diggy. Karun, no, I no play with the bomb, the dang, the dang, diggy, diggy. My style is the bomb, the bomb, the dang, the dang, diggy, diggy. Karun, no, I no play with the bomb, the dang, the dang, diggy, diggy. My style is the bomb, the bomb, the dang, the dang, diggy, diggy. Karun, no, I no play with the bomb, the dang, the dang. Dang, diggy, diggy. A rude boy no play with the bomb. The dang, the dang, diggy, diggy.
For me there's a silver thread.
self-titled record, that was Tommy February 6th with I'll Be Your Angel, one of two personas of the brilliant green front woman Tomoko Kawase, the other one being Tommy Heavenly 6. And now, here's something you'll really enjoy. Chuck Jones once said about June Foray that she was not the female Mel Blanc, but rather Mel Blanc was the male June Foray. And for that time period, where women were treated a whole lot less equally than their male counterparts, that was a pretty huge compliment. June Foray's passing this past week at the age of 99 is a big hole in the voice acting realm that I'm sure will never be filled again, considering it takes an army of people to bring Blanc's original concoctions to the microphone these days. June Foray played a really big role for me in my childhood, as watching her on Looney Tunes as Granny and Witch Hazel always brought out big laughs. Whether it was the way Granny beat the crap out of Sylvester for trying to eat Tweety, or even watching Witch Hazel laugh and skedaddle as she left her hairpins floating in the air due to her speed, these two characters brought forth a level of comedic gems every time they graced the screen. Her contributions on DuckTales as the villainous Magica Dispel and Mob Beagle also helped make every weekday just a little bit better, funnier, and a tad more wicked. And for her to still do the voice of Granny and Magica up until her death, it showed how much life and vibrant energy she had at such an age. However, it wasn't these Looney Tunes or DuckTales characters that stuck out the most for me when thinking about June Foray's contributions. Instead, the two greatest characters that she helped to bring to life in my childhood had to have been Rocket J. Squirrel and Natasha Fatale in Rocky and Bullwinkle. This was a show that I used to wake up at 6 in the morning to watch on syndicated TV every Saturday, until the likes of Nickelodeon and then Cartoon Network made it easier for me to catch these amazingly funny adventures. To this day, Rocky and Bullwinkle is a series that's both relevant to our modern day and is still just as funny as when it first aired almost 60 years ago. Hell, even the live-action movie that came out in 2000 really was funny, thanks in part to it capturing the true spirit of the cartoon. It's very underrated. I think it's on Netflix. Please go and watch it. You'll see what I'm talking about. Rocky and Bullwinkle was a show that paved the way for the likes of The Flintstones, Mr. Magoo, The Simpsons, Ren and Stimpy, Rocco's Modern Life, and even Regular Show, to not be afraid to throw in some adult humor for the sake of the parents tuning in with their kids. And because of that, animation as a whole became a much better outlet for entertainment, not just for a younger audience, but also an older one. Rocky and Bullwinkle meant so much to me as a kid that in this room here where I record, the man cave as you'd like to call it, sitting on top of my anime collection are four plushies of Rocky, Bullwinkle, Boris, and Natasha. And I got them when the Fleming Brothers, 42 Believer, and I went to, I think it was Super MegaCon a couple years ago. But the show just meant a lot to me as a kid. I loved it to death. So while I'm sad that the voice of my favorite animated squirrel has left this world of ours, I can still be happy that the work of June Foray will forever be appreciated by the likes of myself and future generations. Voice actors everywhere around the country, maybe even the world, owe a debt to her, as she proved time and time again how much of an art form it is to give even the most adorable of cartoon characters the ability to speak. Cartoon actors, anime dubbers, and even game voice actors would not be as respected as they are right now had it not been for June Foray. And for her hard work, we tip our Watsumatayu hats to a talent that will truly never be replaced. Now, speaking of voicing cute characters, right now we're going to spin a recent B-side from the J-pop idol group Forfolio, composed of the main four ladies of the anime series New Game, which you should all be totally watching the second season of. From their Jumpin' Jump Up single, this is Yume Iro Compass. The Kings of Bangkok Rock, that was Slot Machine with Love, which is something I think we can all use a bit more of these days. You can find this on their Time Machine compilation album. Fingers are crossed so hard that they come back to America soon. The best band on that tour with Miavi and Kiha in the Faces. Joining us now on No Borders, No Race is a game designer from Joy Manufacturing Company, who are currently developing their debut title, Ambition, a Minuet in Power, which is hoping to release in the second quarter of 2018. Please welcome Mr. Luther Patenge. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Evan. Just taking a break from my normal task of dealing with media outlets and working through spreadsheets.
That's good to hear. So, first off, I want to know a little bit more about Joy Manufacturing Company. How was it founded?
So the company was originally, I guess, like founded back in August of 2016. I was working at RockU, which is a mobile and social games company that decided to liquidate my team. And I have bear no ill will against them. They were really good to us. But I had been working on this hobby project that at the time was being called De Winter. And I realized that I had a bunch of money saved up because I've always been hoping to go indie. And I also had severance. And I was legally allowed to apply for unemployment while I tried to figure my life out. And I'm like, well, there's going to be no better time for me to try this. So I decided to start going forward with it. Originally, it was a solo thing. I was just working on the game by myself in Unity in my free time. Then I worked on it full time. And once I got it to a point that I felt was appropriate, I started showing it around to a bunch of former coworkers from a company I worked at called Kabam to show that, like, this is not just an idea. This is something really solid. This is something I think we could really make work. And they were interested. In December, Al Kairos and Mike Seltzer signed on with me, and we just started working as a team.
Now, what was it about your pitch that made them want to sign on to Ambition?
I would say that my pitch was two parts. Part of it was the game itself, and the other part was our focus on process. So we have, in the game industry, you get a lot of cases. There's a joke that the most common swear word in games is ship it, which is, you know, no one has time for anything. Deadlines are crushing you all the time, and you push something out the door because it has to be done, because otherwise, what else are you going to do? And I really wanted to do a team that really focused on trying to get things done right the first time, because it leads to long-term time savings, and we just didn't want to be beholden to arbitrary deadlines. So that was one of the things that made it, the idea seem attractive. And the other one was, we're trying something really different. The Ambition, for those who have not heard much about it, is a game where you play as a young woman in 18th century France trying to claw her way to the top of society, while also being very cognizant that something terrible is about to happen in the form of the French Revolution, and trying to figure out how to do enough fence sitting to end up on the winning side of history. And there's not a lot of games out there like that. We wanted to just see if we could try something new, and I think that was something very appealing to us, is doing something different.
Now, I know you just mentioned the French Revolution. Did that play as a big inspiration for Ambition, or was there something else that, like, helped to bring to life this idea?
It's very funny you ask that, because the original idea for Ambition was, I was with my former roommate, Dan. He and I were drunk watching the original 1930s version of The Three Musketeers. Yeah, exactly. Like, Angela Lansbury's in it, and like all these other, like, classic actors. And we're just watching this, and we had this weird realization moment, because when you look at The Three Musketeers as a story, you have the musketeers and you have the king, who are perfect examples of what I would like to call hard power. Like, if the king wants something done, he tells a person to do it and it happens. If the Three Musketeers want someone to be gone, they just put 3 feet of steel through them and it's over. And, like, yeah. And so, like, but then you had one of the main bad guys was Lady De Winter, which is where the original name of the project came from. And she doesn't have direct power of any kind, both from not being at the right level of nobility and also being a woman in this case, I think, 1600s France. And So as a result, she is working her ass off all the time. Like, you know, everyone else can like take rest, but she always has to be scheming, always has to be plotting, always has to be seducing, always has to be poisoning or lying. Like, she has to work for every inch she gets of like victory. And we thought that that was a really interesting character. I was like, wow, there's not a lot of games about something like that. So that's originally how the ball started rolling.
Wow, that's crazy. I've actually seen like the original way back when. I have more memories of like the one that came in the 90s where it was like the Rod Stewart, Bryan Adams theme song.
Yeah.
But I vaguely remember the one from the 30s because Angela Lansbury played a little bit of my childhood, especially with that and Bed Knobs and Broomsticks.
Absolutely.
Now, with Ambition, the first title that you're developing, it's going to be a mixture of RPG and dating sims. So how did you decide to combine these two really different genres for this game?
So originally I went with the dating sim angle because that was the most obvious thing for a game that had a, I guess you would call it a romantic focus. You know, it is about the games people play with each other's hearts. But one of the problems with those games is the technical term we use is state machine, in that it functions like a choose-your-own-adventure novel. It's just being tracked by a computer where, you know, if you go here and say this, then go there and say that, the result is identical every single time because the computer's just keeping track of a few finite states. And we started realizing that that doesn't allow for a lot of replayability. And it also makes the history part a little weird because the people back then had no idea how things were going to turn out. You know, there were plenty of monarchists who thought that this revolution wasn't going to be a big deal, and they obviously paid for it with their heads.
Yeah.
And I went, all right, well, what does a really good job with making a hard time to guess things? Roguelikes. You know, I've been playing a bunch of Binding of Isaac and FTL and really thinking about that. I was like, well, there must be a way to combine these two elements so that as the player is playing, they're much more in the shoes of the protagonist, where you have to kind of keep your ear to the ground. You're like, oh, wait, I'm hearing that there's some, you know, I was dating this one lieutenant, and he's saying that soldiers are grumbling about the fact that no one's been paid in months. That's a big deal. You know, those guys are way less likely to stand by the crown when the shit hits the fan. Or you might hear from the clergy that, like, they've doubled down their support for the king because their belief in divine right, and he's been paying lots of good money to the church and all that. You're like, okay, well, you know, that's a major political force, that the Second Estate. And, you know, so the player has to sort of think like the main character, Yvette, if they want to succeed.
Now, what can you tell us more about the character of Yvette?
So Yvette is a common woman from a middle-class family in the south of France. She is the youngest of many children in her family, which means that by inheritance law purposes, she gets nothing. Almost all assets legally back then went to the eldest, which led to, obviously, a lot of pretty bitter disputes. And Yvette, one of the things we wanted, you know, the title of the game, Ambition, is she's the kind of person who has always wanted more. Like, especially for someone like being a woman in 18th century France, she has been told her whole life that she's supposed to sit in one place and just sort of take what's given to her, and that's not the way she sees the world at all. Mm-hmm. So at some point, she ends up engaged to a young baron named Armand, who, that's fantastic. Being able to marry up into a noble family comes with tons of benefits. And her family just kind of wants to get rid of this daughter who is being a, you know, kind of a thorn in their sides. So they pack her off to Paris to go be with this guy. And when Yvette arrives, there's nothing. Armand ain't there. And he basically, you know, leaves a mysterious message and pieces out. So he can do some major political cause that he can't tell her about, because those were all the rage back then.
Right, right.
And so, basically, Yvette is stranded in Paris by herself and now has to figure her things out. And the only real skill set she has to her name is that she is very educated and very social. And how do you make a living with that? And so, it's like, well, professional socialite seems to be on the table. Let's rock.
So, like, with the game, you have this sort of, like, dating sim aspect where I'm going to assume you're going to be trying to I won't say swoon over the lords, but maybe persuade them in many ways. So, like, what are some of the means of winning their hearts, or more importantly, the wallets of these sorts of individuals?
So the game actually allows you to pursue a variety of people, all coming with some potential positives and drawbacks. Mm-hmm. You can pursue both men and women during the course of the game. And there are many, many famous lesbian affairs throughout that period in history. And we wanted to at least be true to form. Because, I mean, like, there were four different people who I think were accused of being Marie Antoinette's lesbian lover. And it's some of them are unclear. Some of them are obvious political rivalry. But, like, you know, so that part of his, that stuff was happening all the time. Why not have it in the game?
Yeah.
And you can also try and pursue someone who's married. And this is a time period of serial adultery. Everyone was cheating on everyone all the time. But at the same time, you have to make sure that you didn't get caught doing it in public and people be willing to ignore it. So the main means of meeting people is going out to these parties and events. And so much like networking at a real event, you know, you're moving through a room, you're working the room, you're getting information, you're winning people over and establishing your reputation. But then you have these sort of, I guess you could call them conversation boss fights, where you're talking with the host of this party who is, they're the host, they're the big deal. And if you can impress them enough, they're at least willing to hear what you got to say, so to speak. And you can start talking with them, and then it starts turning a little bit into some of the more traditional dating sim calendar management. So, like, for example, if you go to, you have the big calendar full of different parties you can go to, and if you stay out of the loop for too long, bad things start happening to you socially because, you know, you're out of sight, out of mind. But if you go to too many things in a row, you just kind of become exhausted and start functioning less and less. So it's up to you to sort of perform this balancing act. But while you're doing this, you also have to start seeing people one-on-one and figuring out what they like to do. And obviously, you can look at people and sort of figure it out. Like, let's just say, we'll bring up a real historical figure, Talleyrand.
Okay.
Talleyrand was crippled at birth due to an accident. So, like, he, you know, one of his legs was really screwed up as a child. Odds are unlikely that he's going to want to go out dancing. He's going to be pretty miffed if you ask him to. So, a lot of it will be feeling people out, reading bios, listening to rumors. And so you can sort of grow together with this person. And also, eventually, they might ask you to do things for them. Like, I need you to go to this party, and I need you to convince so-and-so that my political rival is a huge jerk. You know, can you do this for me? And, you know, you got a quest. Let's see if it can happen.
I wanted to quickly ask you about, because you were talking about the conversational boss fights, as it were. And the very first thing that actually came to mind was the, I don't know if you remember the insult sword fight sequence in Monkey Island 2. I don't know if that played an inspiration for that.
So that was definitely a piece of inspiration, is the idea that conversations could not just be little, dialogue trees, but they could be mechanics. And we went in a different direction mechanically from it, where you're looking at people and gauging their interests, and you have things you can say in conversations. Like, let's just say you have four people in front of you. One of them likes theater, one of them likes politics, one of them likes gossip, one of them likes music. And you have these remarks in front of you that you can say to the different people throughout the group, and those sort of determine what you're saying to everyone, and you're trying to keep in line with people's interests and not talk about things that they don't like to talk about. Like, let's just say the person who's really into gossip hates theater for one reason or another.
Right.
And if you keep talking to her about that, she's going to get annoyed with you and not want, and, like, you know, develop a crappy opinion of you. But if you leave someone out of a conversation for too long, they grow bored and they just think you're boring and shitty. So you have to constantly be bouncing back and forth with these people as you control the conversation to try and make sure as many people as possible walk away from this conversation with a positive impression of you.
Now, one of the other things that I saw that you were talking about in the press release was the concept of outfits for Yvette and how that plays into her social life as sorts. Kind of like how, like, if you were wearing an outfit in a regular RPG, that might help protect you even more. But how do the outfits in this game assist with you raising your social class, as it were?
Okay, so the game has five factions in it. The Crown, the Church, the Military, the Bourgeoisie, and the Revolution, the common people. And each one of these groups have different tastes. So, like, imagine all the outfits have a variety of stats, such as their modesty level, how luxurious they look, and, like, what style they are. And styles will switch throughout the course of the game pretty frequently. Back in the day, in this period, new fashion magazines came out around every 10 days. It was ludicrous.
Damn. That's crazy. Yeah, as
it was basically, it was the beginning of the fashion industry as we know it. It was the first time that people bought clothes for reasons other than the fact that their old ones had worn out. And the idea just took people by storm. It went nuts. And so it's on the plus side, it gave us huge resources. Like, there are surviving fashion magazines and plates from the period. And, like, we found archives of these things, and we're trying to put as many of them into the game as possible, because some of them are so cool looking and some of them are so ridiculous that we just want them to be in there. Like, people, like, there was a famous ship crash, and for a while it was like authentic for women to have, like, in that massive Marie Antoinette hairstyle, they would have a little model ship in there.
What?
To show, yes, to pay their respects for the crashed ship. They were putting memes in their hair. It was rad.
Oh my god, I've never heard this before.
Yeah, I feel like the more I read about this period, the crazier and crazier it gets, and, like, the better. We started off with, do we have enough for a game? And now we're like, can we fit this all in the game?
Wow. That's bonkers. Like, that's the only thing I could. And this is all real. Like, this was all real. And I just can't really picture it too much. Like, this sounds like something more for what's going on at comic conventions and video game conventions and the like, but for them to be doing this in the 1700s, that's just insane.
Yeah, it's in a way, it's kind of a nice thing, because it makes you realize people haven't changed that much.
Right, that is true. That is very true. So, one part in the game's description that I was sent that really got me a big laugh, and I'm going to read this verbatim.
Go for it, dude.
Become enemies with screeching harpies and chauvinistic boars, then drive them to social ruin. I love that. It just sounds hilarious. So I'm curious to know more about how you can destroy the lives of these social snails.
So, for one, you can develop enemies throughout the game through a variety of ways. Everything from special events to, well, if you start seeing someone who is married, their spouse or one of their spouse's friends, they're not stupid. They're going to figure out something's happening, and they're going to want to take you down a peg or two. So you'll start seeing these people at parties, and they're going to want to mess with your life. And so ways you can drill people, you can, when you encounter these enemies during conversations, there are a few alternate strategies you can try. Some of my friends have been playing, testing the game, like the version where you're extremely nice to them. And if you are extremely nice to this person, they kind of don't know what to do around you, because they came spoiling for a fight and they haven't gotten it. And you can kind of neutralize them that way by being something they don't expect.
Right. You can basically, like, break their spirit by being nice to them.
Yeah, because they're trying to point out to everyone that you're such a jerk and no one else can see the fault. It's like, that person's been nothing but nice to you. What is wrong with you? Or you can go the alternate path, which is my favorite one, which is you say every possible mean thing to them, and once they become angry, they're going to start throwing social attacks at you with wild abandon. But if you can tank that hate, you can basically beat that person like a piñata for points, because they're so angry they're making a fool of themselves, and you're just the one feeding off of ammunition for it.
Wow, that sounds like a blast.
Yeah, exactly. It's like there's something really satisfying about it, and I just want to make sure the game does that. And, you know, we want to convey in the artwork and in their you know, whatever little audio clips we can put in for them, that this person is just the worst. They are just the most hateable individual.
Now, with sound clips you just mentioned, are we going to be looking for full voice acting in this video game?
Probably not, unfortunately. So I'll give you a quick preview of sometimes how difficult audio can be in games. We are working for our trailer for the Kickstarter campaign, and there is a very good voiceover segment in it. I'm very happy with it. That voiceover segment is 1 minute and 44 seconds long, I believe.
Okay.
To get that voice recording segment required us to get our actress and do 4 hours of recording, which distilled down to 1 hour of audio, which was then cut down to 1 minute and 44 seconds of actual usable in-game audio.
Jeez, wow. Like, I have friends in the voice acting business, but I never heard of an incident that took that long for just a short clip.
Yeah, it was, and I mean, you know, obviously when you get people who are much higher in the world of voice acting, like both from an audio engineer standpoint, from a performer standpoint, and all the other bits in between, you can get a higher rate of efficiency, but it gives you kind of a real appreciation for, you know, you have like a Mass Effect series, which has nearly a day's worth of dialogue in it. And like the amount, it took a small army to get all that audio in there.
Right.
And for us, we're also very cognizant of the fact that as a small studio, great audio can be great, but bad audio of good lines can ruin things. Like, we have all played games with that one, everything was good, but it had that one annoying character whose voice was like sandpaper on your eardrums. And, like, no, we never want to put people through that, so we're going to try and be as judicious with our audio as possible.
Right. Completely understandable. With it being, like, your first game, you want to make an amazing product to show people what you can do, but you don't want to push the boundaries too much.
Mm-hmm. We want to keep things of reasonable scope, and we want to take that probably, you know, smaller product that we're making, and we'd rather polish that to a diamond sheen than have a larger product that isn't as polished.
Completely understandable. It's a good way of thinking, and it's a good way for developing.
Mm-hmm. And I like to think because, people are putting in their rare free time and their hard-earned money into our thing. I want to respect people's time as much as possible. If they open up our game, I want them to be excited by every moment of it.
Mm. That's very good. Very good to hear. Going back to the game itself, I wanted to ask, now since Ambition takes place during the upcoming revolution, will there be aspects where Yvette is going to need to decide which side she'll be on when the protesters come banging on the doors?
Yes, that will be a major portion of it. It's not just what you do, but how society is perceiving what you do. Because depending on who wins this revolution, there's going to be a lot of revenge and ugliness that comes afterwards. And, you know, being secretly on one side isn't good enough for survival, especially when people were literally being tried in the court of public opinion.
Mm.
So, you know, the good example I've been using has been, if you watch Game of Thrones, Margaery Tyrell was always making sure that she was seen out in public with the people doing all these good deeds, but you could tell very early on that she wasn't doing this out of the goodness of her heart. She was doing this as like creating a political shield. And the player may have to play that game a little bit if they want to win.
Yeah, it's basically like you're trying to be good in public just to save your own ass when the shit hits the fan.
Mm-hmm. And you know, when players are playing the game, they might be role playing it to themselves differently. Maybe they really do care about this cause, and that's the way they see things. You know, I've had lots of friends who've role played their way through FTL, where even when it wasn't in their favor mechanically, they say to themselves like, well, "What would Captain Kirk do? He totally let these guys go," and like, you know, because that's the kind of character they want to be while they play.
Now, speaking of that sort of unique gameplay style for everyone, this game Ambition is going to have a procedural generation system factor, which means that, like, no two game playthroughs are going to be alike. So, how will this affect everyone's experience who plays this game?
Well, for one, I want to make it so that people feel compelled to play through the game multiple times. That they say, oh man, that was a really good go round. I wonder what it's like if I try it again. I want people to want to choose that because, they get to experience what we've made more. That's great for us. It's great value for them. I think that's really cool. And I also like it because I remember was, for example, when Fallout 3 started. I had some friends. We all played it at the same time. But right when we exited the vault, we all went in different directions. And it was always fascinating to sit down at lunch and listen to everyone talk about their story of themselves playing through the game and the crazy things they saw. And I think that, you know, encouraging that kind of interaction between players is really cool. Because if everyone plays, if the game is identical the same way through, there's little to talk about. There's little personal story of that the player experiences of their moment-to-moment decision-making. But the world's a little different every time through. You're like, oh yeah, I met so-and-so, they're a huge jerk. And you're like, what? That guy is rad. And that's a much more interesting conversation for people to have about the game.
Absolutely, and it's why I'm a big fan of visual novels of the sort. Like last year, one of my favorite games, and actually my game of the year pick, was one called Valhalla, where you played this bartender in a cyberpunk realm.
Yeah, cyberpunk bartending action. Yeah, yes. I'm literally staring at it on my desktop right now.
Yep, that was my game of the year last year, and I loved it because of all the different multiple aspects, the characters, and just all the different ways you can play the game, whether you're a really good bartender, a great listener, or a shitty bartender and don't really care.
Yeah, what was it? Streaming Chan was one of my favorite characters because she was such a fantastic... It's like, this is funny and kind of creepy because it feels so prescient. Like, this is totally going to happen.
I'm glad you're familiar with that title because a lot of people aren't yet, and I'm trying to push more people to know that game.
Well, they are missing out because it's great and it's cheap as hell on Steam.
Yes, absolutely. But going back to your game, because we're here to talk about your game.
All right.
So with Ambition, I know you mentioned it earlier, but you're going to be planning to bring it to Kickstarter shortly. So what do you hope Kickstarter will do to help make your first title in the vision that you're all hoping to have it for?
Well, I'm hoping that people check us out and give us a fair shake. I hope they watch the trailer. Our artist, Al, has put so much work into it, and our composer, John Robert Matz, his work has been absolutely divine in terms of the composition and the music. And our voice actress, Ellie, she's really kicked it up a notch. And, hopefully the lines I wrote are good too, I hope. But... I hope people give it a fair shake. Obviously, if you like what you see, please, buy into the campaign. Check out our rewards are going to be pretty sweet, I think. And even if it's not necessarily your thing, maybe it is something for your friends. Please share it around. I think that games is such a huge space with so many different kinds of stories we can be telling, so many different kinds of gameplay we can be doing. And I want to sort of push at that envelope a little bit. I want to try and make things that are really new and feel really different.
Now, I know it might be too early to ask, but do you have stretch goals in mind if you wind up raising more than you plan to?
We definitely have stretch goals in mind. The first announcement anyone will hear of it is, well, for one of them, we'd like to be able to bring on another artist so we have more resources for making the visuals of the world more in-depth. The whole game is gorgeous 2D illustrations, and we want to bring as much of that as possible. And the other one is, we'd eventually like to have multiple selectable characters. Sort of like how in FTL, when you play it, you get the one ship, but then you meet a few conditions and you unlock a different one. And so with this, by playing as a different character, you sort of experience the world in a very different way. So, one of them is you, one of the potential characters is you play as a young half-French, half-Haitian woman who has come to Paris to claim her inheritance, but because of her race, the other members of her family, who she's never met before, don't believe her and essentially lock her out.
Ooh.
And so she is now left out in the cold on the other side of the planet from the rest of her family and is saying, okay, well, if you won't give me what I deserve... by rights, then I will find other means to obtain it. And you now have to play a very different experience because obviously the life of Yvette and the life of this other character, society reacts to them very different ways.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah, thank you. And the other one is potentially, we've got one of them, what she's close to my heart, or Carolina, a young German girl who gets brought over, who is much more of like the Paris Hilton party girl type, who has like kind of problems understanding French, but her mechanics allow her to play with the alcohol mechanics really well in the game. So, you know, if you want to be the fun, drunk train wreck, you can try playing through as her.
So it's kind of like Sofia Coppola's rendition of Marie Antoinette.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that plus a few extra pints of whiskey. And you can crash your way through society like that. And another one, Donatien, which would be... These are all stretch goals, so we have no idea if these will be in the game. I hope so. Donatien is a man who has returned to France under an assumed name because of a mysterious past. And, well, he has similar seduction mechanics to everyone else, so how you play through 18th century France as a bisexual man? Like, the rules for him are very, very different, and society's going to judge him very differently. Mm. And you have to try and play with that and see, well, okay, you know, is there a way to turn all of this to my advantage? Because we wanted to sort of have that variety of experiences open to people.
Right. Yeah, those are some great ideas. I'm hoping that you find a way to get them to get to the stretch goals. But you know what? Worst comes to worst, there's always sequels and spinoffs.
Sequels, spinoffs, DLC. It all depends on just how things work out for us. And, you know, again, it's part of like trying to keep the scope as small and polished as possible. And if good things come along, we can expand. But we still want to focus on making a solid product.
Right, which is the most important thing. Now, do you have a planned date for the launch of the Kickstarter?
We're hoping probably something in late August, but I will keep you posted as that timeline evolves. There are so many things that go into making a trailer. It's like a project all of its own. So we're just going to... I'm going to have to take a little bit out of Blizzard and CD Projekt's book by saying it'll be done when it's done.
Right. And that's never too bad a thing to say. So I guess my final question for you is simple, but maybe a complex answer. Why should our listeners play Ambition, A Minuet in Power?
Have you ever like watched a Disney movie and thought that the villainess was kind of the coolest person in the whole thing?
Yes.
Yeah, do you want to do that? Like, that's really the one it comes down to. Do you want to just go around parties and ruin people because it's awesome? that's pretty much it.
Luther, thank you so much for joining me here on No Borders Erased. Ambition, A Minuet in Power. Hopefully the Kickstarter will be launched sometime next month, and it'll be hopefully coming to PCs and Macs sometime in the second quarter of 2018. For our listeners, where can more people find information on both Ambition and the joint manufacturing company?
So you can find our website at www.ambition-game.com. And you can see screenshots, illustrations, you can learn a little bit about the team, and you can sign up for our newsletter. This actually would be really important, because if you sign up for our newsletter, we're going to tell people when the Kickstarter campaign is happening ahead of time. And the nice thing about that is that you'll be in the prime position to get the early bird specials and things like that. So, you know, you can even save a little money for yourself.
Listeners, listen to Luther. Go on to ambition-game.com. Sign up for the newsletter so you can be the first to know when you can start helping out with the Kickstarter. Luther, thank you again for joining me here on No Borders, No Race. Best of luck to everybody there, and I am actually looking forward to Ambition. This sounds like it's going to be a great visual novel / RPG / dating sim / French Revolution simulator of sorts. So much in this game.
Thanks, Evan, for having me, and thanks to everyone for listening.
You are very welcome. Our pals from Sushi Mamire are getting ready to release a new album, as well as planning a U.S. tour for this fall. From their 2012 punk opera Shocking, this is Hoka Hoka Day.
Hajimete yo toro toro, hajimete yo toro. Bye.
with Muteki from this year's excellent record, Mabataki. Yuki just finished her Blink Blink 2017 tour in Japan, capping it off with a set at Fuji Rock on the same stage as Bjork and Cornelius. Incidentally, our buddy Manny from the Stampede was there to check it out. Lucky fuck. Well, that about wraps up this week's episode of No Borders, No Race. Remember, for the recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the Boston Bastard Brigade, you can find us at www.b3crew.com. If you have any questions, comments, if you're in a band and want to be featured on the show, you can write to us at thebastards@bostonbastardbrigade.com. You can follow me on Twitter at KingBabyDuckESH, on the J-pop, anime, and video games amino pages at KingBabyDuckESH, on Tumblr at b3crew.tumblr.com, and on Twitch at twitch.tv/omnistryinc. Like us on Facebook.com/BostonBashBrigade and on Facebook.com/Land of Esh. And don't forget about all the other sites under the Land of Esh, including the Electric Sisterhood, Phil's Recap and Review, Smashed Rook, and Nerd Crave. My thanks once again to Luther Patenge of Joy Manufacturing Company for stopping by to chat about Ambition, a minuet in time. Be sure to sign up for their newsletter at ambition-game.com for more information and to get early access for its Kickstarter date. And a very special thanks to Diana Lore for helping to set this interview up. I think we need to end this episode with something a little bit more evil. A band that is fronted by one satanic pope. I am talking, of course, about Ghost, who are currently on the road with Iron Maiden. From their 2015 album, Meliora, this is From the Pinnacle to the Pit. And until next time, this is your King Baby Duck, reminding you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard, but it sure helps.
Hey guys, this is Evan Borgo from the Electric Sisterhood and host of the No Borders, No Race podcast. What you hear each week on our show is but a mere taste of what you can expect from these talented artists from Japan, America, Europe, and the rest of the world. So if you enjoyed something from this week's selections, go to cdjapan.co.jp, amazon.com, iTunes, Bandcamp, the band's official sites, or your local record store to help give these artists your support. We always give our readers and listeners the links to the albums from the respective songs we've spun. So if something resonated with you, give that album name a click and get that record in your possession. Who knows? That one album purchase may help to bring your favorite J-pop artist one step closer to your town. So until next time, keep your volume dimed out and remember to spread the Japanese music revolution wherever your roads take you.